All right, welcome to the Volterra podcast. I think this is number four, right?
Number four. Indeed.
I'm Rowan Kane. I'm here with Louis Reeve. How are we doing, Louis?
We're doing grand. Pretty good, all things considered.
Halfway decent.
Yeah.
Louis just got back from 3 weeks driving around Europe?
Pretty much, yeah. On and off various locations around the European mainland for various reasons as well. But it was, quite an adventure.
Can you go through the countries you were in chronological order?
Obviously, England was where it all began. That was the starting point. Then France, Italy, back to England, France again, Belgium, Holland, Germany, and then Denmark. And then back to Germany, Holland, England.
So
I have a feeling I might have even been in Scotland at one point, but I don't know. It's a bit of a blur, really.
So were those? Why are you hopping back and forth between England and the continent? Because surely you would have wanted to minimize the ferry tolls, no?
Yeah, this is true. Plus, I get very seasick as well, but. As you may know, I have this kind of strange ability to attract very strange employment. And this was actually part of one of them. Certainly one of the sketchier jobs I've done, which was to transport a piece of modern art from Christie's, the auction house in London, to an agriculture baron in Denmark. It was all very strange. It was an entirely cash-paid affair, and I basically had to get this painting and drive it across Europe to Copenhagen. I had my doubts about the whole kind of escapade, really. I wondered why someone who had that much money would need to kind of sort of scab out and trying to do it on the sly with just some bloke. Putting a painting in the back of a Hyundai and driving it across Europe, which is what she did, to her credit. Why she didn't just get a sort of professional insurance company to do it for her. But I was happy with it because it was all cash in hand, and I got it in the end. So that was the reason for one kind of leg of the tour.
That sounds like a short story. Are you gonna write something about that, or is that gonna be kind of? Is this the last time you mention it?
Certainly could be made into some kind of narrative anyway. I was quite kind of paranoid about leaving this painting, which apparently was very valuable and very famous, in the back of what is a very crap car that I took in the various service stations of mainland Europe and the Low Countries and that sort of thing. So I decided I'd drive this whole thing from England to Copenhagen in one go, and so I wouldn't have to deal with the fear of going to sleep with it in like a parking somewhere in rural Belgium, for example. Which was grim, actually. Google Maps is one not really to be believed. Said it would take 12 hours. It actually took 26.
Christmas.
It was a really, really long drive.
Did you get lost? Was it traffic? What was the?
There was a tropical rainstorm in Holland, actually, which was quite. I mean, you've lived in Holland. I didn't realize Holland ever had kind of extremes of anything.
Yeah.
But weather appears to be one, and I suppose the country's sinking, so that might be a reason for it. But rain that was so heavy that like the wipers jammed, so we couldn't.
And there were still people driving by you in. On bikes, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. They don't even wear coats, man.
Yeah. Absolute madness. All right, so that's one trip across the channel. What were the other two?
Well, the other one was the trip back.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah.
I spent a very nice couple of days, a nice week, actually, in Lyon, in France, mm-hmm. and then drove from Lyon to Tuscany, which was also... to excuse my French, a fucking nightmare to drive. Italy being one of those countries where, as far as I can work out, they had the cars before they made any roads or anything like that, and they still haven't really finished. There's no law And it's the only time in my entire life that I've ever actually nearly got into a fight with someone out, like getting out of the car, the kind of standard British guy abroad, and sort of challenging someone to leave their car in order to strike him, so to speak.
What was
it just got too much for me.
What was the cause of that?
He just wouldn't stop pressing his little horn.
Oh,
we're in the middle of Genoa. We've been driving for like about 5 hours, made it about a mile. And yeah, it was a bit of a nightmare. All these one-way roads, and it was pretty hot, and it snapped. And my alter ego, Jock, came out, and I said some pretty bad things, which I won't repeat on air.
Was Jock cultivated in John Burnett or pre-John Burnett?
He's kind of been a work in progress from that sort of thing, yeah.
The 302 Ligans, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Interesting. So, was it one of those really, really, like, high-pitched horns that just, like, sears into the back of your mind and...
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, in Italy, all their cars are the same, these, like, horrible small box things that are covered in dents, and, yeah, it was just, it just all got too much.
Yeah. So, Fiats are coming to the U.S., and they're becoming more and more popular. It's like the anti Cadillac movement in the U.S. And I've just seen like Fiat 500s popping up all over the place, which is something I would never think.
Must be quite a just on a purely physical level. You guys got some really big fucking cars there, like.
Yeah.
I would not really want to be hanging around in a Fiat 500 with some of the vehicles that Americans choose to take to your highways in. But it's very interesting that they've got them there.
Yeah. I think it has something to do. I mean, it's the backlash against the SUV, the SUV soccer mom, the minivan soccer mom kind of thing.
The suburban tank.
The suburban tank. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, we've had smart cars here for a while as well, and those are even in the suburbs. You'll see smart cars popping up, and Fiats are not much bigger than smart cars.
No, it's just got a boot, a trunk.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
that's about the only difference. So while you were away, do you want to go more in depth into driving around Europe or?
No, it's quite fascinating actually, because I've never really done it before. It's not there's no real, for some reason, there's no attached romance to like the grand kind of European drive as there is with sort of America. Really nails it down on the whole driving across America. You've got some sort of. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's a hard feeling to describe. But Europe, it not so much. But it was quite interesting to kind of go down generic stretches of motorway and sample generic, what are they called? Service stations in different languages, which was quite fascinating.
And they all have the same sandwiches.
Yeah.
Every service station across Europe has the same sandwiches.
Yeah, pretty much. They're all much the same. Got a bit. The ones in Holland, you have to pay to go to the toilet, which is a bit of a kick in the teeth. But yeah. You know, once you got over that, it was okay. But yeah, no, it is quite interesting to kind of go through and just every so often you pass into a different country and you wouldn't really know it because you're on a motorway. But you know, you speak to people; they don't speak your language. You don't really speak theirs. I find certainly in the Germanic countries, the level of English is fairly superb.
Yeah. Well, it's close. So it's, yeah. So yeah. So the American driving experience, have you been here? Have you done a road trip here? Have you?
Sure. I actually, what was it? Last summer I drove from San Francisco to New York.
Jesus.
Yeah. It was took 2 months.
Yeah.
It was good. But it certainly, had a lot more romance to it than the the kind of the trans-European expressways, so to speak. They it's kind of fascinating. In America, you can kind of drive for a day and still be not even out of a state, which is.
So which route did you go? Do you know which states you went through?
Yeah, we drove from California, obviously, is San Francisco, and then we drove through all the southern states, really, as far as Louisiana.
Oh, Jesus, you went down south.
Yeah, because we had quite a while to do it in, so it was... And America, as it turns out, is really far away from here, so you might as well kind of make the most of it while you're there.
Yeah. It's like Australia. When you go to Australia from here, you want to go there for, like, 2 months, because... because it's so damn far away.
Exactly. People go there for Christmas. It's like, what's the fucking point? Like, you might as well. Yeah, anyway. But it's another rant. But, so down through all the southern states, and then from New Orleans. There we go. Yeah. Went up the Mississippi River and into kind of where the states get all very long, but not very tall, that bit, like Tennessee and Virginia and stuff. And ended up in Washington, where we dropped the car off and got a bus to New York.
That is quite the trip. And you said it took 2 months?
Yeah, obviously with some of the major cities, we stayed for more than a day.
Right.
You want to see, Lubbock, Texas in its glory.
Does not take very long. So I did that. I did that 3 years ago, I think it was. Okay. Yeah, it would have been 3 years ago. So my sister goes to university in San Diego.
Which is California.
Which is the very bottom left of the U.S. Very, like, it's like right on the Mexican border of California. So I drove her out there, and we made it out in like 5 days.
Where? That's some serious driving.
It was some serious driving, yeah. It was some serious driving. And the one day that really sticks out to me, for some reason, was we were driving through, like, the middle of the desert in Nevada. And it would have been Colorado and Nevada. And it was the day Gaddafi got caught in Libya. Or the days, like, Palace was stormed in Libya or something like that. And we were just listening to, like, CNN radio, like, the reports from Libya, because there was nothing else to do in the car driving through the middle of the desert. And you felt like kind of you were in Libya, because you were in the middle of nowhere, and it was 120 degrees out Fahrenheit, and yeah.
No, it's cool. That is cool.
Yeah, but then on the way back, I did that southern route, so I went through, like, Phoenix, and then... met a friend in Abilene, Texas, and stayed in Abilene, Texas for 3 nights, which I never suggest. It's like staying in Lubbock, Texas for more than a night. Went up to Chicago, stayed in Jackson, then went up to Chicago, and then I skipped all the big cities. I didn't go to New Orleans. I didn't go to Dallas or Austin or any of the ones that you would want to go to. I was basically staying in where I knew people, so.
Fair dues. Well, I can give you my 5-second guide to New Orleans right now, if you want.
Go for it.
New Orleans is an absolute shithole. Nothing good about that place. It's one of the most disappointing towns I think I've ever been to, with the kind of hype behind it. I mean, no offense when Americans kind of... you guys like old stuff, and fair enough. And New Orleans is pretty old, I suppose, by American standards. But it's kind of like a theme park for middle-aged people, is the best way of putting it, really. I Also, not strictly their fault. No one's cleaned up there since that hurricane happened at all. Like, that really, nobody did that, which is quite bad on somebody's part. So a lot of the actual city is just a fucking tip. Like, you can't, like, go there. Like, there's, like, shops that have been washed into a street and just left there for years. And it was just a bit shit. Also, coming from from Britain and the kind of milder climates, it's really hot there.
Yeah.
Like, appallingly humid, and has a terrible, terrible insect problem, especially roaches, which we don't really get here. So it's kind of, you got to get used to that. We actually left a couple of nights early from our reservation at this place because it was just crap. The food was crap. The place was really, really...
Really? The food was crap? Were you on like a budget for food?
No. We thought like, obviously, as we're in New Orleans, we can start splashing out the cash on the big bucks. Once you've traveled through Texas and rural Texas for that long and just been eating like Sonic burgers and stuff, because that's all there is.
Sonic is disgusting, by the way. I despise Sonic, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No. I mean, it's maybe not always Sonic, but another generic kind of chain, and you're kind of craving anything different, really, because it's basically that from once you leave California till you get to Louisiana, that anything changes in terms of food in the kind of rural towns. So, yeah, we did go to a few places, and it was really just very, very disappointing. Your jambalayas, your, what's the other thing, gumbos, the whole thing. It's really? Just prawns and rice, mate, you know? Like, it really wasn't, like, something to blow your mind. I did go to a very fancy restaurant there, but I was so pissed that drunk, pissed is angry, yeah. American. I was just absolutely hammered. I can't remember what the food even was. It seemed like it was okay at the time, but nothing to like write home about, so to speak.
Interesting. All right. Well, that certainly has dampened my mental image of New Orleans. One of my good friends lives in New Orleans, and my sister's been there a couple times, and they have nothing but, well, He has some interesting things to say about it, but my sister loves it. But I take her culinary opinion as heavily as I take yours, really. For someone who sat through John Burnett meals for a year to say that food is bad, it has to be pretty bad.
I mean, to give credit to the state of Louisiana, like, it wasn't quite to the same levels as the University of
St. Andrews. I understand that completely, but the idea that, the relative idea, if you've had John Burnett food, so John Burnett food, just to put it in a kind of one meal or two meal box, so they would have vegetables for dinner at some point, steamed vegetables, which were probably overcooked, disgusting vegetables. And then the next day they'd have vegetable soup, which they just basically blended up the vegetables and threw some broth or whatever in. It was the rules, so you could have, what was it? You could have a dessert or super juice. That's what it was. So you could either have soup, or you could have soup and water, or no soup and juice. And the juice was from concentrate, just nastiness. So you were probably better off with water anyway. But I just remember, I mean, this is 5 years ago now, 6 years ago. It was just, you were constantly kind of hungry. You were constantly grumpy because the food you were eating. And the day they had chicken Kiev was the greatest day ever, because it actually tasted like something beyond...
I think it had been made in another factory, and like they'd had no input into the actual cooking process. Like someone had like squirted the garlic mayo into it, and it was like all they had to do was make it hot, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah. The your bar for low, terrible food after John Burnett has to be pretty low, and I think that's what I'm getting at in terms of New Orleans. For you to say that the food in New Orleans wasn't up to snuff after going through what we had to go through in John Burnett was, gives credence to your opinion.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I shan't be writing a food blog anytime soon.
No. All right. So I think that's it for our driving bit. while you were away and while you were gallivanting across the continent, the world fell apart.
Apparently so, yeah.
The world is just, I mean, it's been falling apart. It's been slowly disintegrating for the past, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. But all of a sudden, the shit hit the fan.
Yeah, it's kind of 2012 proper, like, without Dennis Quaid. Really bad stuff going on.
Yeah, really bad stuff going on. So let's list out, I mean, people who are listening to this will know what's going on in the world. But, so, your top, rank your concern, rank the events that are going on, and your concern, your relative concern.
Well, obviously, I never really get too involved with politics, and I have very little empathy for my fellow human as well, which doesn't help. In terms of relating it to movies, I'd say like the Ebola virus is probably my number one. That seems like genuinely, though it will probably never affect the UK. It is quite a scary concept that there is a. I'd use the term jungle fever, but I don't know if it's strictly PC these days, so I shan't. Anyway, this fever from the jungle coming up in a sort of swathes of West Africa. People are very worried about it here, obviously, because we have a large West African population due to the fact that at one point or several points in their history, they have been colonized by us. And, I think people are very scared that their relatives are going to come to Britain and we're going to get like a 28 days later sort of scenario happening.
Has Nigel Farage let his thoughts be known on it, or has he been...
I don't think actually he said anything, which is
surprising.
Very surprising thinking about it. Yeah. He's made his position pretty clear on that in the past, though, so there's not much more he could say to extend his view. So.
Yeah. All right, so we've got Ebola at number one. What's your number two concern?
Well, the whole situation in Gaza is pretty grim, really. It's one of these situations that have happened a lot of times throughout human history where we've sort of... got very animated about something bad happening, but actually done very little to sort of, apart from wave a few placards in and around university towns in Britain.
To that point, have you seen the Hummus Initiative? Talk about doing nothing. There are these folks who, it's called the Hummus Initiative, and they're taking selfies with hummus to show that the cultures really aren't so different after all.
Because Israelis and Palestinians both like
hummus.
Chickpea dip.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that pretty much, I suppose, epitomizes the kind of futility of the argument. But, it's pretty grim kind of watching sort of areas of the Levant being flattened by shellfire. Interestingly enough, I actually spoke to a colleague at one of my dead-end jobs the other day from Bangladesh, and he was... mentioning, I was like, we were talking about the Gaza conflict, and he was like, oh, I don't know what the problem is with them. And I was like, well, that's a controversial view there, Amin, just to say the least. Would you like to, develop on it? And he went, yeah, man. In Bangladesh in 1971, Pakistanis killed 30 million of us, and that was that. And then he got into Gaza. 1,000? And that was me tell. I was, yeah.
That's some, again, some comparative reality there. 30 million. I had no idea. I mean, I know about the situation, what happened there. It's when India had to come in and kick Pakistan out because Bangladesh and Pakistan used to be one country. But, like, that's 30 million. I had no idea about that.
Apparently 30 million. Though, to be fair, now I'm thinking about it, I did just take his word as gospel.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we work in a bar. Like, I was scrubbing the urinals at the time while talking to him, so it wasn't, you know, like the Security Council of the UN or anything,
right?
Like official channels. But he said, yeah, 30 million Bengalis apparently lost their life in that conflict.
To be fair, there's a shit ton of Bangladeshis out there.
I guess it doesn't make it okay, but there is a lot of Bangladeshis.
Yeah.
I believe the world's in the top five world's most densely populated nations.
Yeah. So I mean, it's. I know you're not a political guru, but where's your stance on Gaza? What's your kind of do you have any kind of opinion on the matter, or is it kind of just, hey, let's just fucking stop people?
I like hummus as well.
Okay.
I think all I could really contribute to the discussion. It's very nice, and yeah.
Okay.
I usually buy Cypriot hummus, to be fair. So that's just from coincidence. The shop is
right,
sells Turkish products rather than Middle Eastern products. I think the tax is less. So, I'd be happy to buy Israeli or Palestinian hummus. It would make no difference to me.
I actually make my own hummus, and it's it's nice.
I tried it once to make it. It was absolutely awful, the one I made. So I get it in the tubs now.
Yeah. All right. Number three, Ebola, Gaza, number three.
Weird plane situation.
So Ukraine, plane in Ukraine.
Plane in Ukraine, plane in Algeria, Mali. That was
That's right. There were like three right in a row. I'd forgotten about that.
One in Thailand as well.
Yeah.
Bang, bang. I suppose that would have been the time to really look for cheap travel. I think, yeah, especially with Malaysia Airlines, they must have had some serious cancellations on their hands there.
They're changing their name, apparently, or there's thoughts about changing their name, which I think is probably a good business move at this point.
I mean, they haven't had the greatest year, I would say.
Greatest 6 months, for Christ's sake.
It's been less, isn't it?
Yeah.
But hey, if you want to go visit like Borneo or Java or anything, I think now, if you want to do it on the cheap, probably now is the time to like get on lastminute.com and have a look.
Yeah.
Because ain't nobody else going to go, especially that flight path.
So do you have any thoughts about Putin, Ukraine?
It's all James Bond sketchy stuff. It's kind of old school.
Yeah. Now, I was also just watching, have you seen Sherlock?
As in the TV show the film with Robert Downey Jr.?
The TV show.
TV show, yeah. Very British.
Yeah.
Very
British. So my mom just started watching, and I walked in and have watched a couple of seasons. And apparently a Russian news source, probably the state-owned Russian news source, was using the Sherlock episode where they... Now, no spoilers here, but they fill a plane full of dead people and are planning to use that as a decoy, basically.
Yeah.
And the Russian media brought that up as an example of what they think actually happened with MH17, with the flight that went down in the Ukraine, which I thought was just, darkly hilarious, but also really, really sad that a country who 20 years ago was in the throes of communist oppression is now, or maybe let's say 40 years ago was, is now returning to media blackouts and propagandized news.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree. It's pretty far-fetched.
Yeah.
When you really think about it, I probably shouldn't have taken it as face value. But yeah, you're right. So.
All right, so we've got Ebola, Gaza, playing the Ukraine. Do you have a fourth?
Nothing that springs to mind. What else is...
So this is probably my number two. Actually, it might be my number one, because I'm just not sure how worried I am about Ebola. Is the Islamic State in... Iraq and Syria, the kind of blending of borders and the little like the creation of a new caliphate in Mesopotamia. So I don't say this just because I wrote an article about this and posted it on Voltaire a couple weeks ago. about how the borders in Iraq and Syria shouldn't be what they are, basically. And this kind of this violent and very ideological and very fanatic group called ISIS, or the Islamic State, is kind of reorganizing the borders. And I don't think that this is going to go away anytime soon. I don't think this is just going to be a kind of flash in the pan, like political entity that goes away after a couple of years. I think this group is kind of here to stay, and having a Islamic caliphate in one of the worst or one of the most politically dangerous areas of the world is not something that that is conducive to peace in the in the region.
I would certainly agree with that.
Yeah. So I don't know if you do you have any have you even been following the
we get it pretty much as I mentioned in an earlier edition of the podcast. We young people from Britain are going out to fight there a lot.
That's right. Yeah.
Actually, while I was in Denmark, I found out that quite a lot of young people from Denmark are also going out to fight there a lot. Yeah. Maybe it's a kind of European thing. But the British government has just come out with a hilarious public information pamphlet, which is what are like signs to tell that one of your friends may be imminently going to fight in Syria. Which is a very British response to what I suppose is quite a dangerous crisis at the moment. But I suppose if you, I don't know, check your friend's email for flight reservations to places east, and then you might be going there.
Have any of your friends, any of your, in your many occupations, hinted at any of them?
Gone out to fight? I mean, obviously, in the kind of jobs I do, there's a lot of people calling in sick, a lot of high turnover of staff, a lot of people getting fired, a lot of people quit.
Yeah.
What they're doing after that, I ain't got no idea. What I can tell you, though, is on that kind of wage, you're not getting a flight to anywhere.
That's true. That's true.
Unless they're walking the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah.
So, ISIS, there are a few freedom fighters less, but anyway.
Yeah, but as a kind of, I mean, you what did you study in school? Classics and ancient history?
I think I did ancient history.
Yeah. Does that, didn't you do your thesis on toilets?
Yeah. I mean, obviously I feel quite passionate about it. The world's first flushing toilet was from the region. Palace of Sargon the Great in ancient Babylon. So it's all kind of centered around there.
Yeah.
Very important, really, to the development of human history. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. Most of it, the British nicked or the French nicked when they left the region. And then Saddam Hussein blew up a lot of the rest of it.
Well, okay, hold on. I think we blew up a fair amount as well. Let's not give Saddam all the credit.
Totally. Yeah. Like, I mean, Saddam Hussein kind of went out of his way to destroy some of it, though, rather than... I mean, obviously, carpet bombing isn't a technique that archaeologists really use. But I guess it wasn't conducive to the sort of preservation of some of the ancient sites.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else going on? Ebola, Gaza, Ukraine, Islamic State. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that is proving the world is ending anytime soon.
I think that's all, really. Certainly around this end. As far as I'm aware, that's really about it. Really.
But let's say those are some pretty significant issues.
Usually, a month isn't this interesting.
Yeah,
that way.
Especially a summer month.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, I think we're gonna wrap things up. Thank you, Louis.
It's been a pleasure as always.
All right. Hope to see you next week sometime.
Absolutely. I will be going up to Scotland, I believe, at some point next week. But either way, I can report from both nations. So
brilliant. Maybe we'll get a little update on the on the Scottish independence movement, which had its first debate a couple nights ago, right?
Absolutely, which I will happily cover in next week's episode.
Brilliant. All right, Louis, talk to you soon.
Catch you later, man.